Orville Freestone Jr. Sunday School, February 5th, 2012.
Let's turn to the 46th chapter of the book of Isaiah. Coming to the end of the first section of the second part of Isaiah, called the Book of Comfort, in which God is comforting Israel in their distress. Last week we read in chapters 44 and 45 that God would have mercy on Israel. He would blot out their transgressions like a cloud and their sins like a mist, and if they would return to him, for he said, I have redeemed you. And he then tells by whose hand he would redeem, that is, deliver them. And he says in 44, starting with verse 27, who says to the deep, be dry, and I will dry up your rivers. Who says to Cyrus, he is my shepherd, he shall fulfill all my purpose. Saying to Jerusalem, she shall be built, and the temple, your foundation shall be laid. Isaiah prophesied this 200 years before Cyrus was born. And he then proceeds in 45 to say, thus saith the Lord unto his anointed Cyrus. He called Cyrus his anointed, though Cyrus was a heathen king, whose right hand I have grasped to subdue nations before him, and to loose the belt of kings, to open doors before him, that gates may not be closed. I will go before you and level the exalted places. I will break in pieces the doors of iron, that is, the gates of Babylon that were coated with iron, and cut through the bars of iron. I will give you the treasures of darkness and the hoards of secret places, that you may know that it is I, the Lord. He prophesied this 200 years before Cyrus was born. Now, in Isaiah's day, in the 8th century B.C., Babylon was not yet a great power. They were a small country subject to Assyria. But even then, Isaiah prophesied to Hezekiah that because he was imprudent in dealings with Babylon, that one day Babylon would take the Judeans captive from their country. Now he prophesies over 200 years into the future, his future, what would happen, how that would be. And these chapters have to deal with the destruction of Babylon. Bel bows down, Nebo stoops. Now Bel and Nebo were both chief among the idol gods of the Babylonians. Their idols, that is, their images, are on beasts and livestock, picturing them in flight from Babylon. These things you carry are borne as burdens on weary beasts. They stoop, they bow down together. They cannot save the burden, but themselves go into captivity. One of the first things that the Persians did when they conquered Babylon was to destroy all of the idols there, and because the Persians were heathen, but they were not idol worshippers. Listen to me, O house of Jacob, all the remnant of the house of Israel, who have been born by me from before your birth, carried from the womb, even to your old age, I am he. And to gray hairs I will carry you. I have made, and I will bear, I will carry, I will save. Now he is saying this to the people who are still in captivity in Babylon before it is destroyed. Listen to me, O house of Jacob, and all the remnants of the house of Israel, you who have been born by me from before your birth. This refers to Israel's in Egypt, and God figuratively says that he bore them as a mother bears a child when they were in the land of Egypt, and carried you from the womb. Even to your old age, I am he, and to gray hairs I will carry you. I have made, I will bear, I will carry, I will save. This was a promise to Israel, but it is a promise I think that each one of us can take, because God cares for nations. He cares for Israel's too. He knew us before we were born. God, in fact, told Jeremiah that. And indeed, in the New Testament, we learned that we were predestined from before the foundation of the world to be conformed to the image of his Son. So we too can take this as a promise to us that God will care for us. He does take care of his own, even though he allows dire circumstances to come upon them. To whom will you liken me? This is his call to the idol worshipers. To whom will you liken me and make me equal and compare me that we may be alike? Those who lavish gold from the purse and weigh out silver in the scales hire a goldsmith and he makes it into a god. Then they fall down and worship. They lift it to their shoulders, they carry it. They set it in its place and it stands here. And this still happens. It happens here in Denver when the East Indians who have a temple in East Denver carry their idol down the street. But in other countries it happens too when they carry idols of that they call saints in procession down the street. There is no difference. So here they lift it to their shoulders. They carry it. They set it in its place, and it stands there. It cannot move from its place. If one cries to it, it does not answer or save him from his trouble. Remember this and stand firm. Recall to mind your transgressors. Remember the former things of old. This he speaks to Israel. And remember, in Isaiah's day, there were many idol worshipers among those in Judea. This is one of the reasons God sent them into captivity. Remember this and stand firm. Recall it to mind, you transgressors. Remember the former things of old, God's former dealings with them. For I am God and there is no other. I am God and there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times things not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will accomplish all my purpose, calling a bird of prey from the east. Here, prophecy is one of the main things by which the Bible itself claims to be the Word of God. And many of the prophecies, numerous prophecies in Isaiah's day, had already been fulfilled. And many of those that were to him future, we can look back on history and see that they were filled. Declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times, things that are not yet done, as we look out upon our world and we see the dangers and the potentials for war all around, as we hear the ravings of Fidel Castro and the harangues of Ahmadinejad, and we can look and see the ravings of Khrushchev and others in Russia during the communist years, and we can see what they came to, and the same end will happen to these today. Declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times, things not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will accomplish all my purpose, calling a bird of prey from the east. This bird of prey from the east was Cyrus, whom he had mentioned in the last chapter, coming from Persia, far to the east of Israel in that day. The man of my counsel from a far country, I have spoken, and I will bring it to pass. I have purposed, and I will do it. Listen to me, you stubborn of heart, you who are far from righteousness. Oh, that you had paid attention to my commandments. Then your peace would have been like a river, and your righteousness like the waves of the sea. Your offsprings would have been like the sand, and your descendants like the grains. Your name would never be cut off or destroyed from before me. This is God's tender plea to Israel. He is prophesying dire punishment for them, for their apostasy, for their idolatry, and he cries out to them, oh, that you had paid attention to my commandments. Almost sound like in despair. And this is one of the great revelations of God, one that we take for granted, and yet it was so rare in the ancient world. Only the people of Israel understood, and most of them did not. For the ancient philosophers, those who came the closest to a knowledge of God, they did not understand. They claimed that God was what they called impassible, meaning that God was unable to have emotional feelings like us. Because as one of the philosophers said, if God were passible, that is, if he were capable of emotions, he would not be perfect. For God is perfect in every way. And if he would change in any way, it would be for the worse. So God does not have passions like we do. And yet all through the Old Testament we read how God loves his creation, how God was in a covenant of love with Israel, how we're going to read in a bit how he said, in all of Israel's trouble, in all of their trouble, he was troubled with them. And here he is expressing what Israel could have been if they had been faithful to him. One of our poets wrote, of all sad words of tongue or pen, the saddest of are these, it might have been. And that is what Isaiah is saying here in his poetry. Oh, that you had paid attention to my commandments. Then your peace would have been like a river. It is sad to see in our own day people who know God who will not walk with God. To see people who turn away from what they know is right, who do what they know God is displeased with, and then when life goes wrong, They say, why would God do this to me? When God didn't, they did it to themselves. And that's what Isaiah is saying to his people here. Oh, that you had paid attention to my commandments. Then your peace would have been like a river. We have a hymn using this line in our hymnal. And your righteousness like the waves of the sea that is never ceasing to roll. Your offspring would have been like the sand, and your descendants like its grains. Their name would never be cut off or destroyed from before me. And then this is his word to the Jewish captives in Babylon at the time when Cyrus the Persian destroyed Babylon, freed them from captivity. He said, go out from Babylon, flee from Chaldea, declare this with a shout of joy, proclaim it, send it out to the end of the earth. Say, the Lord has redeemed his servant Jacob. They did not thirst when he led them through the deserts. He made water flow from the rock. He split the rock, and the water gushed out. This was his call to Israel when he released them from their Babylonian captivity to return to Judea, to rebuild Jerusalem and the temple, looking forward to the time of the prophets Haggai and Zechariah, and to the governor and the high priest of that time during the time of Zechariah. A few of the Jews at that time did go back to Judea. Most of the Jews did not go back to Judea at that time. There's an inventory of the names of the people in Nehemiah who went back, and maybe between 10 and 20,000 of all of the thousands of Jews in Babylon went back. Most of them stayed in Babylon, and most of them were living in Babylon in Jesus' time as well, and until 1948 when they all immigrated to Israel. But here he tells them to go back, flee from Babylon, and to go back to their own land, and that he would bless them. And then we read a phrase that is repeated 3 or 4 times by Isaiah. There is no peace, saith my God, for the wicked. And in chapter 49, he begins with another call to them who are scattered abroad. Listen to me, O coastlands, and give attention, you peoples from afar. The Lord called me from the womb. From the body of my mother, he named my name. He made my mouth like a sharp sword. In the shadow of his hand, he hid me. He made me a polished arrow in his quiver. He hid me away. And he said, you are my servant, you Israel, in whom I will be glorified. Here, in figurative language again, he tells how Israel became a nation, how he equipped them to flee from Egypt, and how he protected them all this time. Israel, in whom I will be glorified. But I said, I have labored in vain. I have spent my strength for nothing in vanity. Yet surely my right is with the Lord, and my recompense with my God. And now the Lord says, he who formed thee from the womb to be his servant, to bring Jacob back to him, and that Israel might be gathered to him. For I am honored in the eyes of the Lord, and my God has become my strength. He says, it is too light a thing that you should be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob and to bring back the preserved from Israel. I will make you as a light unto the nations. And as he starts out, seemingly speaking about the nation of Israel, we see increasingly here he is talking about the person, his servant. We read about the person, his servant, before, and now this, the Apostle Paul quoted this in the book of Romans and applied it to Christ. It is too light a thing for you should be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob, to bring back the preserved of Israel. I will make you a light for the nations, or as it said in Romans, a light to the Gentiles. This is cited in Acts 13:47 concerning Christ, that my salvation may reach to the ends of the earth. Thus saith the Lord, the Redeemer of Israel and his Holy One, to one deeply despised, abhorred by the nation, and the servant of rulers. Kings shall see thee and arise, princes, and they shall prostrate themselves, because the Lord, who is faithful, the Holy One of Israel, who has chosen you. Again, this is speaking of Christ, the Redeemer of Israel, to the one deeply despised and abhorred by the nation. We read that in the 53rd chapter of Isaiah, describing plainly this person who is the servant of the Lord, whom they despised. Yet he is saying here that he will be justified. And this part of the prophecy has not yet been fulfilled, but will be. Kings shall see and arise, princes, and they shall prostrate themselves, because the Lord, who is faithful, the Holy One of Israel, who has chosen you. Thus says the Lord, in a time of favor I have answered you. This also is quoted in the New Testament in 2 Corinthians 6:2. In a time of favor I have answered you. In a day of salvation I have helped you. I will keep you and give you as a covenant to the people, to establish the land. This is to the person who was the anointed of the Lord, the Messiah, to Christ, to apportion the desolate heritages, saying to the prisoners, come out, and to those who sit in darkness, to appear. And they shall feed along the ways, all on bare heights shall be their pasture. They shall not hunger nor thirst, neither scorching wind nor sun shall strike them. For he who has pity on them will lead them. Speaking of the prisoners, of the captives of Israel. For he who has pity on them will lead them, and by springs of water will guide them. And I will make all my mountains a road, and my highways shall be raised up. Behold, these shall come from afar, speaking of the ingathering of Israel from the nations. And behold, these from the north and from the west, and these from the land of Sin. Say, sing for joy, O heavens, exult, O earth. Break forth, O mountains, into singing, for the Lord has comforted his people and will have compassion on the afflicted. But Zion said, the Lord has forsaken me. My Lord has forgotten me. Many an individual Christian has said that, not realizing how good God has been to them. Don't let us fall into that category of forgetting God's goodness and thinking that we are forsaken. Can a woman forget her nursing child, that she should have no compassion on the son of her womb? Well, yes, she can. We read about this all too often in the newspaper, hear it on the television. But this is the strongest bond of love known to humankind, that of a mother for an infant child. Even these may forget, yet will I not forget you. Behold, I have graven you on the palms of my hands. Your walls are continually before me. In chapter 49, we begin the second section of this second part of Isaiah. In chapters 40 to 48, we have the Book of Comfort, where God was comforting the captives of Israel or of Judah, and the prophet was speaking of the time from his time to the time of the return of the captives under Ezra and Nehemiah. And he was giving them the prophecies concerning Babylon, concerning Cyrus, and we learn many things in this section about Israel and God's comfort for them. Now, in the second section, we read of the book of Emmanuel, the book of Messiah. And so here he is speaking of when God calls Israel back from among the nations, referring to a time that is yet future. What is so marvelous about this book of Isaiah is how it reveals how tender God is toward humankind, how tender he is towards Israel in particular. And in the New Testament, in the quotations from Isaiah, we see how God is so tender and kind towards his church and towards those who trust in him. And Isaiah was trying to comfort Israel, to show them that even in their deepest trial, God was with them. Even in their times of sorrow, even in times of punishment, that God was with them, and that he would be with them, and there is a bright future. It has been said that of all the nations, they look back toward a lost golden age. Remember the glory of Greece? Remember the glory of Rome? Remember the glory of the Empire of Spain? Remember the glory of the British Empire on which the sun had never set? All ages of glory in the past. Israel is the only nation who has a golden age in the future. And towards that, Isaiah was trying to show them to ever look toward that coming time. And the Jews still do look for that time to come. And thank God it won't be long. I don't believe before it will come. Sing for joy, O heavens, and exult, O earth. Break forth, O mountains, into singing, for the Lord has comforted his people, and he will have compassion on his afflicted. But Zion said, the Lord has forsaken me. My Lord has forgotten me. How many people have you known to say that, perhaps in their time of depression, or in times when, due to their own doings, life had gone wrong? Can a woman forget her nursing child, that she should have no compassion on the son of her womb? Even these may forget, yet I will not forget you. Behold, I have graven you on the palm of my hands. Your walls are continually before me." And this is a marvelous statement of Isaiah. I have graven thee on the palm of my hands. The only time that this was ever done in ancient times was when in branding slaves, when they would have a brand in the palm of their hand or in the middle of the forehead. You remember in the book of Revelation how the mark of the beast was to be either in the palm of the hand or on the forehead? Well, the reason for that is if a runaway slave, he could not conceal his identity, because you cannot conceal your hand. You have to be doing things with your hand, and people would see it. And you can't really conceal a brand on the forehead, even by a comb-over. So that is a strange thing for God to say, that he would engrave us on his hands, that we would be ever, in especially Israel here, but it applies to individuals too, we would be ever in his memory by being engraved on his hand, a part of our body that cannot be concealed. You can't wear gloves forever. Your walls are continually before me. Your builders make haste. Your destroyers and those who have laid you waste go out from you. Lift up your eyes around and see. They all gather. They come to you. As I live, declares the Lord, you shall put them all on as an ornament, and you shall bind them on as a bride does. Here he's speaking of the Gentile peoples being attracted to Israel. Surely your waste and your desolate places and your devastated land, surely now you will be too narrow for your inhabitants, and those who swallow you up will be far away. And that is true of Israel even today. Brother Crook just handed me a piece showing the map of the Near East, showing Israel as just a very thin little country there in regard to the size of the nations round about them. And it is too narrow for them today. There are too many for the little land that they have, and yet they are happy to have what they do have. But when we were Israel, our guide stopped at one little town by the Mediterranean Sea, and as we sat in a courtyard there enjoying a cool drink, he says, "You know, the Muslims are only 6 miles away here." That is the narrowest part of that nation of Israel, and it is too narrow for them today. And just 6 miles away were those who would like to run all of the Jews into the sea. But the time will come. Surely now you will be too narrow for your inhabitants, speaking of the land, and those who swallowed you up will be far away, not just 6 miles away. The children of your bereavement will yet say in your ears, "The place is too narrow for me. Make room for me to dwell in." And this is exactly what Israel is saying today when they are continually building apartments around Jerusalem. And the Arabs are saying that they are illegally transgressing on land that isn't theirs. "The place is too narrow for me. Make room for me to dwell in." Then you will say in your heart, "Who has borne me these things? I was bereaved and barren and exiled and put away, but who has brought up these? Behold, I was left alone. From whence have these come?" Speaking of the Jews gathering from afar, is the nation is here pictured as speaking of these as her children. One of the peculiarities of the Hebrew language is they have no neuter gender. Everything is grammatically either masculine or feminine, and cities are always feminine, and the inhabitants of the cities are always called the daughters of the city, or the inhabitants of the country as the children of the country. And here Isaiah is picturing Israel in as she was in dispersion. I was bereaved and barren, that is, few in number. Exiled and put away, that is, divorced and away from the land. But who has brought up these, those in gathered in from the nations, the children of the nation of Israel? Who has brought up these? Behold, I was left alone. From where have these come? Throughout the Bible, in English, the Israelites and the Jews were called the children of Israel, or as it is usually in the Hebrew, the sons of Israel, the descendants. Who are these? Where have they come from? The sudden influx of the Jews from all corners of the earth. But we'll pick up that next time.